As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more 5-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain. This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today.
Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. I'm Michael Sacca.
And I'm Matt Goldman. Today we talked with JD Grepham from Simple Focus. It's a client services company that's also acquired a handful of products, SaaS products. And he had an interesting outlook on the whole process. What'd you think?
Yeah, I love talking about selling smaller apps. So, you know, his focus was kind of under 250K in yearly revenue. And, you know, there's a lot of these out there, but you don't often hear about these acquisitions, how they come together. And so he gave us kind of the other side of the table, if you will, on what these deals look like. What did you think?
Yeah, he also shared how he's financing the deals and, you know, how he makes it make sense with the current team that he has. And everyone knows how hard it is to start a new SaaS app. And this was a different take on acquiring something that's gotten through those first few months of difficulty, has some cash flow, and just needs a little bit of love to pick the growth back up again. So this one was great. Let's get into it.
If you're going to get into the SaaS business, you know, the investment is all up front and the reward is all downstream, right?
Right.
Well, what you do is you spend all your time building a SaaS app that you don't know whether or not it's going to take off, and you don't know what kind of traction it is or isn't going to get, or how the market's going to accept it. So it's a big risk to like just build a new SaaS app. I mean, there's lots of reward potentially, but you don't know. And so since Simple Focus is not really a, you know, a well-known agency, we don't, you know, it's, you know, I don't have my chip on my shoulder about it or anything, but like, you know, we're not web celebrities, and we're just, you know, kind of doing good work here in Memphis, get a little office in Portland, we're doing our thing. But like, we can't just send a tweet out and get, you know, 1,000 retweets because we launched something new, you know, that's really good. We could do really good work and launch it and could kind of, you know, would sit there in a vacuum and be, because we don't know how to market it either.
Okay.
So what I did was I was like, you know what, we do have a successful consulting business that's profitable. So let's see if there's a way around that. And so when the first opportunity presented itself to buy a SaaS business, that was Pulse. And Pulse had like 350 customers. It gained 10 customers a month. It lost 10 customers a month, you know, and it had done that for like 3 years, basically. Okay. In maintenance mode.
And what did Pulse do for those that haven't heard of it?
Pulse is also kind of a financial app. It's a cash flow management app.
Okay.
But what I saw was like, here's an opportunity to like sort of short circuit that risk with building something and not know how it's going to be accepted. And so, you know, I liked that. That sort of said, you know what, we've got a stable business. The risk here is in finding the cash. And so if you find the cash, you know, you can sort of, by getting over that first hurdle of growth, you can hit that first milestone of stability in the business.
So did Pulse have a steady cash flow coming in, even though that they had a high churn?
The churn was higher than it needed to be, but it did. I mean, it was remaining flat, which meant it was acquiring, just as many customers as it was losing through churn. So for 3 years in maintenance mode, this thing was selling itself well enough through organic SEO to replace all the customers it was losing. So for 3 years, we have a flat business with nobody paying any attention to it. So it was like, this is a real good opportunity to, you know, take over something that's stable. I mean, what could we do to ruin it? You know, it was our first one. I was like, what could we do to screw this up? Not a lot, you know? And it started growing just because we started taking better care of the customers and focusing on, you know, fixing some memory leaks. As simple as that.
And Pulse isn't your only product. So when you're acquiring multiple different SaaS apps that have these, you know, decent revenue streams, I see that you minimize the risk by getting a project that's already proven in some way, but how do you scale that out and get capital to fund the gap between, you know, paying off the initial purchase price?
That's a great question. So banks aren't really open to this traditionally. They don't understand software, at least traditional banks don't understand like software as a service. They want something as an asset that they can like hold in their hands that they know what to do with, right? The house, like a car. Well, what I did is I developed a really good relationship with a banker from back home. I'm from North Louisiana, small town banker, you know, proverbial high school friend, family owns a bank sort of situation, and sort of started explaining SaaS to him and sharing how it works and having him look into things like bare metrics and, you know, SaaS metrics and, you know, learn how the business operates and customer acquisition costs, churn. He was learning all the terminology. He started getting excited about it. He said, you know, let's do this. So I, you know, was able to, rather than, you know, drop my, you know, life savings on these things, what we'd do is we'd borrow against, you know, cash in the bank through a bank, right? So it's kind of guaranteed that way to make it easier for the bank to swallow. But what you do is you find a multiple for the sales price that's lower than the term loan's length, right? So if you can buy a SaaS app for, you know, 1.5x annual revenue, that's 18 months. And if you could get a, you know, let's call it a 3-year term loan on that, you're cash flow positive while you service debt.
So how do you find products that are in this place where they're proven to some point, they have some revenue, and they're willing to sell at maybe a lower multiple that makes sense for you to buy it?
That's a good question too. You got all kinds of good questions.
Because it seems like if they're to the point where they have a few grand in revenue and like things are picking up, maybe it's been flat for a while, but there's hope. It seems like they'd want to hold on to that and grow it to the next level. Or if they were going to sell, they'd want to get a good rate based on the promise.
Yeah. See, I'm finding ones where the founders have given up hope. They don't want to invest. They're not in a place to invest in growth, and they've remained flat despite the founders, sort of letting it go, so to speak, inability to pay attention to it or whatever. So originally the founders of Pulse were in an interesting situation because they were running a little consulting business and built this app, and then sort of the consulting business split up. They went separate ways. One guy went into the ministry full time. One guy moved to Chicago and then ended up, getting a job at a big fancy startup in San Francisco, making big bucks. And so the little bit of money that this SaaS app was spitting off was being split between the two of them. And they just sort of had their energy focused elsewhere. And, half of this company's revenue isn't really that compelling for an individual. All of it would have been. So, they sort of kicked around the idea of one selling to the other, but, kind of realized that they just really weren't interested in running this business anymore. And I offered them, a buyout where they could just take some cash and put it in the bank all at once rather than putting a little bit each month. They had sort of mentally checked out. And my case was helped by the fact that there were two of them, and it really wasn't enough money for them compared or relative to what they were doing elsewhere. So one guy, for him, it wasn't about the money. He wanted to be in the ministry full time. The other guy had a sweet gig in San Francisco, director of development or something like that, and had a good salary. And so what he was making off of Pulse wasn't really making a dent for him. And so they just kind of wanted to put some cash in the bank. I don't know. And then with Ballpark, which I bought from MetaLab, kind of the similar case. They wanted to focus all of their energy on their consulting business, but also this SaaS app that they built that kind of took off and was like kicking major butt, called Flow. And they wanted to put all their energy behind Flow and kind of focus singularly on that. And so what Andrew wanted to do was free his team up from having to worry about Ballpark. So it was more of a distraction than anything. And so, I came in with a fair offer and, the rest is history.
When Rainn Wilson realized he had a special gift for talking people to sleep, he had two choices: construct a massive speaker that would blast his voice to every person in the country, or invent a talking pillow. AT&T Business eventually talked him into the pillow thing. And, backed by a reliable network, the only network with built-in security controls, Sleep with Rainn was a hit. Take your ideas to the moon and beyond at business.att.com. That's business.att.com.
So in those kind of deals, what's the typical multiple that you're looking at on the, I guess it's off the yearly revenue?
Yeah, it's going to be off of revenue for a SaaS business, because they pretty much, none of the ones I purchased came with a staff or anything like that, right? Mm-hmm. Just purchasing assets. And, I'll speak in general terms about these SaaS apps because, we've got contracts in place that say do not disclose specifics. Sure. And all that. But what you're looking at is like, if you're looking at like TechCrunch and those kind of multiples, you're crazy,
Okay.
Something's worth what the market will bear. And, there are valuation companies and consultants out there who will, evaluate these things based off of what the books say, and then you kind of layer in a little bit of reality, and it's like, well, even though it could evaluate it 15 or 20x, it really ain't worth that because nobody wants it. The smaller SaaS apps, I'm going to call these, let's call them the $50,000 to $200,000 range, right? Anything under $250,000 or so.
Okay.
Those types of apps are going to go for 1 to 3X.
Okay.
Which means, you know, depending on what kind of shape it's in, technical debt-wise, is it growing? Is it shrinking? Is it flat? You know, I mean, that's kind of what they're worth. And the reason is because they're too big for, you know, some individual to come along and mortgage their house against.
Mm-hmm.
They're too small for a company that's that has the money to pay that.
Right.
So if you've got, let's call it $500,000 sitting in a bank somewhere, right, you're not interested in increasing your annual revenue $150,000,
$200,000. Okay.
Because if you got $500,000, you got enough revenue continually coming in. So it's an interesting place to be in where this size acquisition doesn't happen a lot because they're kind of hard to get rid of.
Interesting.
You've got to have a team that's able to take over because they're usually not going to come with staff, you know. So you've got to have the spare cycles because to think of a, let's call it $100,000 business as profitable, if that's going to be profitable, it's going to have one or less employees, right?
Yeah.
And so what we do at Simple Focus to make it feel profitable is we run it in our spare cycles, right, in between client work. And especially if you're going to be servicing debt. So if you're going to be servicing, let's say, a $100,000 loan over 4 years, that's going to be, you know, $25,000-$30,000 a year to service debt. Your revenues, let's, you know, going to be after you service debt, it's going to be 70. You know, so that's really not profitable if you have to put an employee on that.
Mm.
And so what you really want to do is have existing resources in place that can absorb that.
So when you're finding a project like Pulse, how do you come across those? Are you just constantly looking for these products that are maybe neglected a bit or where the founders have been distracted and throwing offers out, or are they coming to you seeing that you buy up these products?
Well, the answer to that question is pretty simple. It's not like I'm out there beating the bushes looking for SaaS apps to acquire. Pulse presented itself because I was friends with the founders and I knew what they had been doing for years and years. And I always joked with them, hey, one day I want to buy Pulse from you. It looks like an awesome business. And, you know, they laughed it off and said, you know, it's actually making money. So, you know, it's not cheap. And eventually it sort of came to it. So after 4 or 5 years of just having a relationship with some friends, it turned into an acquisition. With Ballpark, it was a little bit different. I stumbled across Andrew Wilkinson's Medium post on like New Year's Eve 6 months ago because he had tweeted that Ballpark was for sale in case anybody had missed the news. And this was the first I'd heard of it, and I just checked it out. And I instantly remembered Ballpark because at the bottom of the Ballpark homepage, it says something like keep your finger on the pulse of your cash flow or something like that. So I had registered that in my head previously and was like, oh, well, this is like kind of a competitor to Pulse. I should look into this. And so I reached out to him and asked him what was going on. Found out that it had been like for sale for a year and nobody had bought it. And so I was able to, you know, negotiate with him to, you know, get a good price and tell him how good I'd take care of his customers and make sure that it was in good hands, you know. But see, I didn't know Andrew personally. I just saw his tweet. But since Ballpark, I've had a bunch of people reach out because Ballpark was a lot more well-known than Pulse in the industry. And so I've had people start to reach out to me and say, hey, you know, I know a guy. Or, hey, I know some founders who are tired of what they're doing. Or, hey, would you be interested in this? And so I've had a lot more conversations since Ballpark. And actually, by the time this podcast is out, we'll be closed on our next acquisition, which is PopSurvey and Temper.io.
Oh,
which,
yeah.
Two sort of survey tools. PopSurvey's been around forever. And Temper's kind of a newer product, and it's really exciting and growing. It's actually one of those SaaS products for SaaS businesses.
Yeah, that's very cool. And it makes sense because what Josh is, he's Josh Pigford, right? He's going to focus on barometrics, right? I'd assume.
Yeah. So actually, Josh started focusing on barometrics a long time ago and it wasn't actually part of the deal. So his original investor or partner or whatever his role was, David Hauser, was the guy who owned Pop Survey and Temper. It wasn't Josh anymore.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
even know that.
David, well, see, David's kind of like, you know, he just sold Grasshopper. So he's sort of at a place in life where he's really not interested in maintaining Pop Survey and Temper either. So he wanted to get rid of them because, you know, selling Grasshopper was kind of a big deal. You know, Google it and see that pretty quickly. They were making $30-something million a year. So, you know, I'm sure that was a pretty big check. And, you know, he kind of wasn't too worried about it. You know, he was like, you know what? I just want to make sure the customers are taken care of. I want to make sure somebody takes this and runs with it. And that's what we did. But Josh is the one who made the introduction because just got to talking with Josh after signing up for Barometrics. And we were just having a conversation one day on Skype. And he said, you know what you're doing is interesting. You should talk to David. So it's really, I guess the short answer is just having conversations with people leads to opportunities. You know, we're always open to, I'm always open to these deals. But it's not like, it's not like I'm creating a fund of SaaS businesses. I just happen to have acquired four of them in the last year and a half.
So this may be fresh since you're going through the process now, but earlier you mentioned technical debt. What kind of visibility do you get into these products before you make the deal to know that it's something that, you know, A, your team's going to be familiar with, and B, that there's not a ton of technical debt in there that you'd have to overcome?
Well, I mean, the higher the multiple, the more you want to look into that, right? I mean, I've done it sort of three different ways. I mean, the code review we did on Pulse was pretty in-depth because it was the first time we had done something like that. And so we just, you know, I don't even think Pulse was on GitHub. I think we just got a zip of it or something, the code base, and we just kind of poked at it and got it running locally and said, okay, this is in decent shape. Ballpark from MetaLab, on the other hand, everything was really tight and solid, man. We opened it up, got it off of GitHub. They just sort of said, here it is. Here's your read access. And we pulled it down and looked at it. And it was like, wow. This is super clean because, you know, MetaLab knows what they're doing. They've been doing this for a while, and they got a team of really talented people. Pop Survey and Temper, you know, I know Josh, and, you know, he's the one who built them. And so I trust that they're in decent shape, but also I know they're kind of old. So, you know, we just don't know exactly what we're getting into. But on this one, the deal was so good that I just kind of wanted to make it move fast. And so we've done a lot less discovery on that. But, you know, since I'm not a developer, I kind of rely on the team here at Simple Focus to look at the code and tell me if it's decent or not. You know, and with Pulse, you know, they looked at it and said, you know, I'd give it a C+, B-. With Ballpark, they gave it, you know, this is A++. And with Pop Survey and Temper, we'll just wait and see. I mean, as soon as we get our hands on it, it's running. We've looked at it. It's okay. I mean, but we haven't really dug in too deep yet.
Have you ever had a deal fall apart during the negotiation?
Yeah, I mean, fall apart.
As it, well, you decided not to move forward with it for one reason or another?
Yeah, I mean, so the deal on Ballpark was all a really positive experience, but, you know, dealing with someone like Andrew and MetaLab was a lot different than dealing with my buddies, you know, from the Pulse acquisition. So, you know, those were two completely different experiences. And so it was more of a negotiation, and there was some back and forth. And sometimes when I got worried that I was, you know, going to lose the deal, we were just so excited about it, though. It stayed really positive and ended up being a great win-win for both sides. And then, I talked to Ian Landsman, about a possible acquisition of one of his little products, and that ended up going nowhere. And it was really mostly because it just technically wasn't the best fit for our skill set here at Simple Focus. We do mostly Rails development, and this product was PHP. It was on Laravel, and it also had to do with a lot of email stuff. And anytime I've ever been frustrated with work, it's mostly been because of email server issues. And so it just wasn't technically something that I was like comfortable with. But it's a great product, and he's gone on and sold it to another crew and stayed a partner. It looks like they're doing great. But that conversation kind of, you know, we got to the point where we're talking numbers and everything, and it ended up not going anywhere just because it ended up not being a good fit. I had another deal. You know, I'm not going to say with whom because it was kind of kept confidential, but it was a much bigger business, bigger than anything we had acquired before. And so just getting the funds together just wasn't going to work out.
What are the techniques that founders have used that make the negotiation easier?
So one of the things that that Andrew did with Ballpark when I first reached out to him that made it really easy and kind of raised the level of trust was, you know, we sort of you know, it's small business talking to small business, you know, and so there wasn't a lot of, oh, you know, we need to sign a confidentiality agreement and blah, blah, blah. It's like more like, hey, we're kind of operating off of each other's reputations. And so let's see as quickly as possible if we're in the same, if you'll forgive me, ballpark.
Right.
as one another. And so like the next day he just invited me to, you know, after I gave him some general things I want to know, the next day he invited me to Baremetrics, which answered like 85% of the questions I had.
Okay.
And he just opened up Baremetrics, and there it was. And in fact, all of the revenue and whatnot ended up not being in Baremetrics, which made the deal a little awkward and shaky there for a minute. But it's a great tool. These tools that do this type of thing, First Officer, Chart Mogul, Baremetrics, they'll kind of make it really easy to look at the health of a SaaS business, and within 5 minutes you can figure out if it's something you're interested in. So having those metrics handy and having clean books, those are the two biggest things. And just sort of having a lot of, you know, trust in one another to be honest and not BS around. You know, it's like, look, here's what I need. You know, here's what I got. And do you want to do a deal? And you can know pretty quickly within a day or two if something's going to go somewhere or not, usually.
That's a really cool use of those. That's that makes it easy for Andrew not having to put together a deck or anything for you, just being able to shoot you an invite.
Yeah, well, I mean, think about the people that I'm buying these apps from. They're people who've kind of moved on to other things, to bigger and better things. They don't want it to be a distraction. And so one of the values I have when I come in to acquire something is I'm like, look, dude, I'm going to make this easy on you, you know, quick. I've done this before. I know, you know, how to evaluate something quickly. The due diligence is going to be really easy and simple. You know, I need some bookkeeping stuff. I need your SaaS metrics, and I want to look at, you know, Google Analytics and see what all, you know, domain names you own. That's pretty much it. As long as you've got all the passwords and everything, and everything's not a tangled mess on the books, it can be pretty straightforward and simple.
So what's the upper limit on this? You're going to be at what, 5 projects that you've acquired?
This will be 4 when we finish on Pop Survey and Temper.
So you have your current team. You can bring in more resources from the banking relationship. You're using overflow from client work to be able to keep these projects going and still remain or stay close to profitability. What's the limit on how far that can stretch before your team's really stretched too thin?
I think that's a good question. I don't know the answer to it quite yet, honestly. The size of the apps makes a big difference. And I guess some of the things that I've learned are, at least with the types of apps I've been getting into, which are basically, you know, CRUD apps, when it comes to customer support, I've kind of got this rough number, and that generally works. If you've got 500 customers, you're going to get 10 or 20 emails a week, which makes it pretty easy for me as the owner of a company with like 15 people to still handle the email, right? And the customers really appreciate seeing, you know, owner in the signature when you respond to a customer support email, because they're typically owners themselves. I mean, at Ballpark, you know, if you're, you know, a freelancer or running a design agency or something like that, or with Pulse, if, you know, you're managing cash flow, so it's sort of like owner speaking to owner sort of situation, and that's nice. The customer support is the biggest challenge, because I mean, we're buying things that, you know, I mean, we're not putting them in maintenance mode, but if we've got to take a month off of product development and focus on a client project, we can, because these things run. You know, they don't have memory leaks, they don't crash, they're not full of bugs. And so if we ever need to focus on client work, we can. But the best part is that, you know, the client work is consistent enough, but also profitable enough. And we're not like, you know, working crazy hours, pulling all-nighters and burning them in night oil. So we've actually just kind of scheduled in time every week to work on these products. We just spent 2 months building out the new feature for Ballpark, which was a big, huge enhancement called Projects. And I took a Rails developer full time, and basically the number two guy here at Simple Focus, most of his time, and the two of them took 2 months and built out this huge new feature for Ballpark. It's kind of a luxury to be able to do that, but at the same time, it's an investment that's going to pay off for us long term, and it's going to help the product grow and be better for the customers, you know.
What's the end goal for Simple Focus? Is it to have a suite of SaaS apps that you maintain and grow and build? Or is it always to maintain that agency style with SaaS as the enhancement?
So this is a question I get a lot. I love the client services business. I like working on new challenges. I like working on interesting things. And I like changing it up and not always necessarily working on just one thing. I like to bounce around personally. And everybody on the team's a little bit different. So I've got some team members who want to work on one thing all the time. I've got some team members who can't go more than a week working on something before they get And so it's kind of a balancing act. And it's something that I'm being really deliberate about. But I do love client services, so I don't see that going away. The interesting thing is that this buying Pulse was done deliberately so that Simple Focus could get some practice working on a digital product.
Okay.
We started out, you know, when I was, you know, working out of the spare bedroom and I first quit my day job 6 years ago, we started out just doing, you know, websites and stuff. And I always had a passion for usability, user experience, and product design. But you know, I ran a web design agency based on those skills, but I always kind of really loved it when an opportunity presented itself to work on something a little more functional. And so over the last 2 years, Simple Focus has flipped into a product design company, a UI company. And incidentally, since we're talking about acquisitions, I did acquire another business, which was a local web design company here in Memphis, Tennessee.
Oh, interesting.
Called Deluge Studios. And this was done in April of last year. And the reason I bought Deluge was so that Simple Focus could focus exclusively on doing digital product design and have somewhere to send all the good regular old web design leads. So the digital marketing stuff, right? So if somebody needs a marketing site done, like a CPA or a restaurant or somebody from Memphis calls or from Portland calls and wants, you know, regular website done, then we've got a business that specializes in that. And now Simple Focus is kind of concentrating on running our own products, of course, but that's, you know, roughly about a third of our business. And the rest of the time we're doing consulting work for product companies and specifically more and more SaaS businesses, a little bit of e-commerce, but for the most part, not, you know, your basic marketing websites.
Very cool. Yeah, it's a great evolution too. And it's great you built up those two tiers. That's not something we always hear about for agencies, but it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, you know, when that happened, I was debating what to do. Like when the other agency owner came to me, I was like, you know, I could absorb this team into Simple Focus, increase my payroll and overhead, or I could show up on the first page of Google twice for Memphis Web Design, right?
Right.
So what I did is I decided to keep the brand separate, let Simple Focus be the interface team, and let Deluge be the marketing team. Part two, to answer your question about like what's the long-term strategy here, is this. If everything went south and I had to close up shop, one of the things that I like about these SaaS businesses is that once the debt's fully serviced and we're almost there, once the debt's fully serviced, I have assets. And I have assets that generate cash flow. And if I had to, if everything went south and I had to, you know, cut the team significantly, or if I had to cut the team entirely at Simple Focus, I still got these apps and I can still provide for my family because while I'm not a Rails developer full time, I have been around web design long enough and that I would be able to at least run these businesses profitably out of a spare bedroom if I had to. And that's the thing that makes it feel kind of like these apps are there's sort of a plan B. I hope it never comes to that, but because I want to be able to take care of the people who put their faith in me to provide for their families and help provide for their families. But it is something that I do think about when I'm up late at night worrying about a client who may not be renewing their contract or whatever on the consulting side of the business, is that this is kind of a security blanket. You know, the cash flow stability really helps me sleep at night, and I'm keenly aware of cash flow because, you know, one of the apps we run is a cash flow app. So there's that. I mean, that's certainly part of it.
Well, that's amazing. It seems like something really great to work towards, and I think that's a good place to end it. So where can people keep up with you online?
You can find me on Twitter, JD Graffam, G-R-A-F-F-A-M. You could just go to simplefocus.com and read about us and all the products that we're into.
Great. Thanks so much.
I don't do Snapchat, so don't look for me there.
Dang. Well, cool. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks, Michael. Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Rocket Ship Podcast. If you enjoyed it, we have tons of other awesome episodes on our website. Check them out, rocketship.fm.
And be sure to check out our app discount section, where we have discounts on products that we use every day, like Woo Themes, Wistia, Treehouse. Go to rocketship.fm/essentials and get your discounts today. Thank you.